Welcome, everybody, to the Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Each week, Ray spotlights in-depth interviews with legendary and up-and-coming authors and music artists. Ray also features the movers and the shakers of the music and publishing industries and suggests important methods for getting the most out of your public relations and marketing needs. Please welcome music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ray Shasho, and welcome to the show where we spotlight legendary and up-and-coming music artists and authors. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552 or visit www.publicityworksagency.com. We shine only when we make you shine. Our very special guest today is author, sculptor, artist, and poet Ginger Gilmore. Pink Floyd's David Gilmour, Ginger Gilmour, and Matthew Gilmour created a multimedia phenomenon. One book, two albums, simultaneously and coincidentally released. Ginger Gilmour released her book, Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon. Matthew Gilmour, son of David and Ginger, released his album titled The Gray. David Gilmour released his solo album, Rattle That Lock. And despite living in separate houses, separate lives, the family affair still carries on creatively, says Ginger, with a smile. It is such an energetic period to be living, especially watching our children's artistic flowering within the wings of our support, she adds. Matthew Gilmour released his first solo album, entitled The Gray, which received high acclaim from all who have listened. I'm extremely proud of him. He has climbed a great mountain, says Ginger. It has been amazing to watch him grow into the artist he has become. It is only the beginning, she adds. Matthew's website is www.matthewgilmour.com. The album contains 11 cuts containing 10 of Matthew's original material recorded in Texas at the private recording studio of musician-producer Danny Johnson of Steppenwolf and tweaked and mastered by James Guthrie of Pink Floyd fame. Matthew is someone to be reckoned with. The world needs to hear this music, says James. The album contains 11 cuts containing 10 of Matthew's original material recorded in Texas at the private recording studio of musician-producer Danny Johnson. Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon is Ginger's personal way of thanking David for such a wonderful, adventure-filled life, a story never told before. It consists of 653 pages, 140 photographs, and 90 descriptive stories as she walks us through individual chapters of her life, glimpsing her heart as you meander down the hallways of her life, pausing and peeking inside a closet or two, a one-of-a-kind life that takes you to secret beach hideaways in the Greek islands to a remote Middle Eastern village where the likes of Mick Jagger frolic within a hidden world unknown to fans. Ginger's life has crossed paths with a list of rock and roll's biggest stars, spiritual teachers, therapists, friends, and adversaries who have helped to guide her to live, let go, forgive, and love God. Her self-published book itself has been described as a work of art by fans who have already received it. The book is not a tell-all about a collection of, but a collection of self-revealing stories of love, truth, motherhood, and creativity. Through her artwork and self-belief that she shares, it is evident Ginger's passion is to uplift others' hearts beyond the challenges and to remember the beauty that they are. It is a must-have for those who want to glimpse the other side of the wall. It is brimming with content that will enlighten anyone who was part of that rock and roll era or has ever dreamt that they could have been. Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon can be ordered through Ginger's website, www.angelscript.com, and also available on amazon.com. It is my great pleasure to welcome author, sculptor, artist, and poet Ginger Gilmour to the Ray Shasho Show. Welcome, Ginger.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. I want to thank you, first of all, for being on the show. And it's funny because David Gilmour recently performed at Madison Square Garden April 11th. So, yep, it's still going on, the family tradition, I guess.
Well, creativity is our soul.
Yes, it is. How are the kids doing, by the way?
They're fine. They're growing up. They're going into their own careers and things. We're very close.
Yeah, I'd love to get Matthew on the show and talk about his album release and what he's got going on nowadays. I think that'll be great. That'll be wonderful.
I think that would be great too.
Yeah. Now, do you still live at near? Is it West Sussex in that area?
Yes, I do. Matthew lives in Austin at the moment.
Austin, Texas?
Yeah, yeah. He loves it
there.
Oh,
really? Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a good music scene over there. It's a great music scene, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, he thinks so, too. He just finished Southwest Southwest. He had I think he had 5 gigs during that week.
Oh, really?
It went very well, yes.
Well, more power to him, because it'd be wonderful to carry on the Gilmore name in the music business, because, you know, a lot of these guys are, you know, I hate to say it, but are getting old and close to retirement. So we need a new generation of, you know, of rock and rollers to continue, because, you know, I'm a little worried about the genre, you know.
Matthew brings in a special sound, and I remember it's in my book. There was a time that David was playing Japan, and I took Matthew with us. I think he was one and a half.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he always was very interested in all the lights and the cables and everything, and he was very excited about Dad's going to play today. So we took him to the rehearsal, and I said, Matt, it's time Daddy's going to play. So I picked him up, and we're standing at the mixer. David, the floor had come on the stage, and as soon as that blang, Matthew, it was an empty hall, Matthew was screaming, Daddy loud, Daddy too loud, Daddy too loud. And I'm walking him through this empty hall, him screaming while they were rehearsing. But it's funny how life changes things, and now Matthew's doing it. He's a great guitar player, I have to say, and
that's
I love
funny.
His. Yeah, it is very sweet. Yeah, my book.
Needs to make his dad listen to his music, and then so David can say, Matthew, too loud, Matthew,
too loud.
Too loud.
Well, somehow they'll think that. I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, I got to tell you, Memoirs of the Bright Side is an amazing journey of your life, and I have read all 653 pages. I really, really enjoyed the book. It's one of those books that once you get started, you can't put it down, and it's also an easy read, by the way. So I don't want anybody to be intimidated by the 653 pages, because it is broken up with pictures, lots of pictures, very easy to read and understand. I mean, there's no schematics. You don't have to worry about anything complicated. It's just an enjoyable, enjoyable story. And, you know, it's great to hear a story told by, you know, a family member and not somebody that is just a fan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Talking about Pink Floyd.
At first, when I, in meditation, I had the directive that I had to write and tell my story of love. Mm-hmm. And as it took me a couple of years before I said yes to that directive. And when I started, it was love. It was also, it's like the importance of, for every one of us, to look for the bright side always, because things get pretty crazy in life. It's quite challenging. And I certainly have had my challenges. And what has come out of it is the birth of my art, the birth of the importance of beauty. And by telling my story of truth, of my path, from something that was the height of my dream of Prince Charming came to me. I couldn't believe it. And life was just so extraordinary. And the beauty that Floyd created and what we lived. And then, of course, after the wall and things started to get very challenging amongst the band and therefore in our life. And it went on for years. And then eventually things just changed in my life personally. Brokenhearted, huge. My dream is like, oh, my God, how could that happen? You know, it's not what I dreamt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found a new dream. I found a dream that can't be taken away. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty of life. Within the violets and the sunflowers and the rainbows. And I always, whenever something is challenging now, I look there. I look for what God's highest purpose is for whatever happens to me. I know there's a silk lining. Hard way to find it, but
yeah.
I did.
You know what my aunt used to tell me? She says, God will squeeze your neck, but he won't kill you. And, you know, I sometimes believe that. You know, it's a drastic way of kind of saying that, but, I kind of remember that every once in a while, you know. And it's kind of true, because when things get really rough and tough and you can't go on anymore, something does come about where it eases the tension. You know, it might come back again, but it will ease the tension, you know, where you're not down to your last draw, you know. So, yeah. I know
There's
what you mean.
There's always a higher purpose in everything I've discovered.
There is. I agree with you. Well, you know,
greatest,
you... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
The greatest gift that he's given to all of us is this aspect of joy and laughter and the beauty of life. And we forget that sometimes when it's so hard.
We do forget that a lot. You know, you were smitten, and you called David your Prince Charming, but he was just as much, probably even more smitten by you. And I think a lot of it had to do, not only were you beautiful and are beautiful, but it's got to be the red satin hot pants with gold hearts and a full body leotard.
And I was a very good roller skater.
You know, I just can't imagine Pink Floyd going to a roller skating party, you know?
It was fun. What I extremely love is that on the way to the roller skating rink from Ann Arbor, where they had the gig, to the party,
right?
On the way there, the Orson Welles War of the Worlds came on the radio.
Right.
And they hadn't heard it before, and they didn't hear the beginning. So by the time they got to Detroit, they thought the Martians had landed. It was hysterical.
That's funny.
Yeah, that's really funny. Yeah.
David,
there are a lot of good stories in the book.
Oh, they're tremendous stories. You know, he said you were a dream on wheels, correct?
That's
You're a dream
said,
on wheels.
Yeah.
That girl's a dream on wheels. I like that.
Yeah, and I love the story about Stevie Wonder in the last concert that the Floyd had given at Earl's Court in London. There was such anxiety to the point that all the porta cabins, instead of all being in a circle, they all turned their backs so that it became individuals, and then there was this little area with the fake green grass and the white umbrellas and everything, and Stevie Wonder was there, and I was very pregnant. It was one of the few evenings that I could come, and he gave me a seat. Come sit next to me. So I sit next to him, and he put his hand on my tummy and started singing, "Isn't She Lovely?"
Isn't that something?
it was like, did he know it was going to be a girl? You know,
because
we didn't do that. We never knew. We allowed it to happen. And very special moments giving birth to our children.
Was that was with Alice, right? With Alice?
No, it was Sarah.
Oh, Sarah,
it was our third child, yeah.
Right.
And then from that point on, it was 24 years before they played together again. Yeah.
How about when you went to George Harrison's house, and you heard Ravi Shankar music? Wow, you thought it was coming through the speakers of the house, and you open the door, and there's the whole band.
The whole band. Yeah. We had stayed the night, and George came down. We were having breakfast in his kitchen, and the music was playing. It was Ravi Shankar, and I think, gosh, I so love Ravi Shankar. And he says, "Would you like to meet him?" And no, "Would you like to hear him playing?" And I said, "Yeah, how do we do that?" And he says, "Follow me." So we went through one room to another room to another room to another room. And there they all were in white, sitting on the floor playing.
That is so funny. That would have blown me away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw Ravi Shankar play with George Harrison from his, I guess, one and only tour that he did in the States, which was, he was an amazing guy.
Ravi's daughter is very, very, very good.
She's
Have
wonderful.
You ever heard her?
Oh, yeah, she's great. She's really good. Mm-hmm. You were in the beginning, in the early days when you were a model, you were actually on Al Stewart's Modern Times album on the front cover.
Al Stewart, yep.
Al Stewart, yeah. Were you on any other album covers at the time?
No. David didn't really want me modeling.
Right.
So I surrendered to his love and wound up raising children.
Everyone needs to see the album cover. It's a very stunning album cover. Now the house in the background. Whose house was that? The big mansion.
I don't really remember. Storm Thorgerson from the company. I can never pronounce after all these years the name of his company. Hippicognosis, something like that. Anyway, he. I don't know who's. Whose house that was. Goodness.
Beautiful house. It looks like kind of like George's house in a way.
It does, but it isn't. No, it wasn't. No. It was a very cold morning, I tell you.
Don't remember that, huh?
Yes, I do.
Has David read your book?
I have no idea. I said
really?
Yeah, but he's been very, very, very busy, so I have no idea.
Well, he's always been busy.
Pardon?
He's always been busy.
Well, when you're a creative person, just like me, I'm always creating a painting, a sculpture, or writing a book. So
exactly.
It fuels you to be creative.
I'm going to ask you a few Pink Floyd questions, and also... we'll dive into some more stories of the book. But first of all, you seek guidance all the way through the book for so many different people. Why do you think? I mean, were you I don't know, kind of on edge a lot of the times? Maybe from the traveling. Yeah, I know you did a lot of traveling, and you brought the kids along on a lot of those. Which is incredible. I take my hat off to you. I have two children. They're grown now, but we used to take them on trips as well, and it's not that easy. I don't know how you did it.
Well, we just loved having them, and we had some help, and I'm a very organized person.
Well, that's good. How did you get, when they were real little, how did you get them to go to sleep in the hotel room? Because that's always the big, did they sleep with you, or were they in a crib?
We had nannies when we were at the concert so that I wasn't taking them out all the time. But we were very hands-on parents. I don't remember there being a difficulty. I know that Alice, our firstborn, she used to ask to go to bed.
Really?
We had, first off, I had a LaBoye birth, which means it's a particular quiet focus of giving birth, and there's more to it than what I've just said. But on top of that, we carried her all the time from the time she was born. We slept with her for 6 months in between us, and then I never put her in a crib. We had a mattress on the floor in a connecting bedroom, and she never fell out or wandered out the door down the stairs or whatever. She would ask to go to bed.
Wow, that's great. That's wonderful.
Yeah, I think we are very fortunate.
Yeah, the crib thing, I think, does it. If you put them in the crib and they see you, and they're stuck in the crib, I think that's when they go a little crazy. But since they were laying down with you right next to your bed, I think it probably had a lot to do with it. That's great.
Maybe. Well, I hope so. I mean,
it worked.
Yeah.
the guidance you seek throughout your life. Why is that? Why do you think you needed so much guidance all through your life? And I know we all do meditate. Meditation's a wonderful, wonderful thing. But you brought in so many people. I know you had kidney problems. It was a kidney problem too during birth. Is that true?
When I was pregnant with our second daughter and they were doing the wool and we were in France,
right.
I got stung by a wasp twice.
Oh, okay.
Which formed a crystal in the exit valve of my kidney.
Wow. Huh.
So my homeopath in England said to David, get in the paramedics and let me know what they say. And the paramedics in France said she needs to have her kidney and the baby taken out. And Dr. Sharma said, if that's going to be what's happened, I want to make that decision, so can you get her back here? And David was on a Taxexel, the whole Floyd were. And so Dr. Sharma said, give her a shot of brandy and a shot of champagne, and I was teetotal at that point, and get her on a plane, and I'll meet her. And he kept me in his apartment above his clinic.
Right.
And after the first week with different homeopathic remedies and things, I was off the critical list and had my kidney and my baby.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was really good. But to answer your question in regards to special wise people that I met,
right.
I didn't look for them. They came to me. Life brought them to me. And I often wondered, my goodness, does God think I need a lot of help here? Or but it was a training. I have a destiny and to help people. And it takes a certain development of who you are. And all those people helped me with different steps to develop who I am now, to be able to help people to get past crises and
right.
to see beauty, but most of all, to create beauty through my artwork that helps people heal by just looking at them.
Well, let me tell you about your artwork real quick. I love your artwork. It is, you know what? It's funny. I'm looking at a picture in the book, but there's a certain glow when I look at each piece. It's almost like a spiritual glow. And, you know, each statue is very spiritual anyway, but it's like a spiritual glow. Like it's been, it's like almost touched by God is what I really get a very strong connection just looking at your statues. And they're beautiful. They are absolutely beautiful. How long does it take you to make one statue?
Well, it varies because in any piece of artwork that I create, it's a catharsis for me to open up a doorway to God each time so that I give birth to what God wants me to make, not that I sit there and say, well, I'm going to do this today. It doesn't happen like that. I never know what is going to come out in the end. Because I've been trained to be inspired and to inspire people to know that there's something more in life that is so wonderful. And that's what I now know. That's my mission. That's what I have to do. So that when you look at my artwork, it isn't a matter of, oh, Ginger made that. That's a ginger. But ginger does have a certain quality, but it's actually, and I could go on and describe why it is that when you look at it, you're actually looking at your higher self, and every person has one and has God looking at them. And when you say that, you are seeing who you are, God in you.
It is amazing. It is amazing when I look at it. There's a spiritual glow that seems to illuminate from your sculptures. I really believe that. I don't know what's going to happen to me if I see him live.
I know. Well, when are you coming?
Whenever you want. I would love to see him live. You know, the ones in particularly that really struck me was Grace, Contemplation, and Humanitarian Heroes. That's the first one that really I was taken back with. And, of course, Angel of Might. I love, everyone just needs to reflect on these statues in your book, because they are amazing.
And you love, can I share with you the story of humanitarian heroes?
Of course. Yeah, definitely.
That's a maquette with a vision of putting it on the corner of Central Park.
Really?
Every year, I believe, New York City puts up money to have a sculpture there, and that sculpture was to be, 20 foot, if not higher, and on the triangular base would be inscribed all the unsung heroes, so that we'd get schools or communities to put in a name of who is their hero in their community. That was the whole project, but someone else got it instead of my proposal, so it's still sitting there waiting to be put on the corner of Central Park.
Well,
and
once they put that in Central Park, it'll save New York. You will have no more muggers in Central Park, because it's a tremendous, fantastic statue. I've never seen anything like it. I really haven't.
Yeah. It is on my website, gingerart.net, if anyone wants to look at it. And if anyone wants to commission it to be put on the corner of the park, then I'm well up for it. We're ready.
Do you sell any of your pieces at all, or are they just...
All of them are for sale.
They are for sale. Okay. That's that's very good to know. You also have a love for animals.
Yes.
You had Billy the goat that you guys took care of. That's in the book.
Yes.
You had Blue the peacock.
Yep, we did.
You love stray cats, right?
I had 17 of them.
I'm like you. I'm a big animal lover. I could never. I don't think I could ever talk to Ted Nugent. I have interviewed Ted Nugent, but we never talked about animals because I can't go there because he's a big hunter and he'll kill anything in sight. And I'm not like that at all. If I see a deer, I'll go over and hug it. That's the way I am.
Well, there's a chapter on how to talk to animals.
Right.
I was graced to meet Samantha Curry, who still works with people to heal animals or to talk to animals. And there's a whole bit in one of my chapters that tells you how you can do that.
There's some wonderful videos on YouTube, and you always get them on Facebook about animals and how they get along with other animals that they're not supposed to get along with, and humans, the good human-animal interaction. I love those type of videos. I really do.
Well,
go ahead.
She said that when you leave your house and say you're going to stay overnight, what you have to do is visualize. First, you calm yourself. I use the color of blue. And then you open up your heart with love, and I use pink for that. And then you send them pictures. And if you're going away for the day, you see the sun and the moon going around once. You give them a picture that somebody's coming in to feed them. You give them something to do so they don't get bored, check all the windows, go around the whole house and everything, make sure it's cool. And then you see yourself leaving and you see yourself coming back. And it really works. I do it with my animals when I had them all the time.
Animals are so intelligent, and unfortunately, some people really take them for granted. But sometimes I believe they have ESP, and they know exactly what we're going to do. I really believe that.
Well, if you start listening to pictures, because they send you pictures, when you do this particular technique, you can talk to them about things. She had a woman that had written to her, I think she was in Boston, that her cat was not using the litter box, and she was very worried about the cat.
Right.
So Samantha went to see her, And it was a beautiful, beautiful Victorian house that you can get in Boston. But everything was covered with white sheets. And the only room that the woman was living in was this tiny little room on the side. Mm-hmm. And so Samantha went in and held the cat. And she took it into another room. And she did her particular way of talking with pictures. And she waited for the pictures to come. And what she saw was the woman coming. The house was all lit up, no sheets. The woman was happy as anything, in a really great dress. There was a party.
Yeah.
And so Samantha goes back to the woman and says, maybe this picture means something to you. Well, the woman falls into a fit of tears. Mm-hmm. And it was the night before she was to get married, and her fiancé died in a car crash.
Oh, wow.
And from that point onwards, she didn't want to live. And the cat was really worried, and the only way to get the woman to show any attention was to not use the litter box.
Right.
So, and that she was worried for her owner, because she didn't understand why suddenly it became sheets everywhere and the woman was so depressed. But 6 months later, she sent a very happy picture that the cat was using its litter box and that she took all the sheets down and decided that she was going to live again.
Mm. Wow.
Mm.
That's a great story.
It's in the book.
Yeah.
And many more. And
that's
the
a good
other
story.
One that I just love, a very short one, is that Samantha has a bird sanctuary in her own house. She mm-hmm. she gets birds that are injured or, you know, she finds them or loves them and
yeah.
has them flying around everywhere. But she has a pet robin.
Uh-huh. That's unusual.
She calls RJ.
RJ.
And this robin traveled with her while it was still alive.
Huh.
And it was before they had to go through, we had to go through all this checking.
Right.
You know, she even took him to London in her pocket.
Maybe really?
Everywhere she would go, she'd make sure there was proper food for RJ.
Huh.
Amazing woman. Amazing
that
woman.
That is amazing. Yeah. I'm going to ask you some Pink Floyd stuff for
go
our listeners
for it.
Now. Okay. First of all, you know, you traveled like no one I've ever seen travel before, which is really great. I mean, you've had some wonderful experiences throughout your life. You know, I mean, your tour guide in Morocco was Mick Jagger. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He took you to a disco.
This is true.
Yep. And this sentence I'm going to read you now from the book has got to be either a new song to come out or maybe a new book, okay? Blonde hair,
okay.
Hot pants, and platforms in Casablanca. I mean, how cool does that sound? How did you get away with that?
I really don't know. And it actually, I would never do that again because I didn't understand culture. I didn't respect culture. I just thought, I don't know, we were rock and roll and you
yep.
wore hot pants and high heels and blonde and... It's in walking through the Casbah, it's like, hello.
Exactly.
That is so not to do.
Well, I don't think you'd make it back to the States if you did that today.
I'm surprised I did then.
I just can't. I mean, you would definitely stick out like a sore thumb. Cause, I mean, even back then, did the women have to cover their faces?
I didn't
time?
Notice. I've learned so much more about culture since then.
Right.
I was very naive.
You hung out with the Marriotts, Steve Marriott, of course, from lead singer from Humble Pie, who is one of my
faces.
Favorite singers. Yeah.
Small Faces.
The Small Faces. He's what kind of guy was Steve to hang out with?
He was very jolly. Jenny was wonderful. They had an incredible cottage and hollyhocks and flowers, and that's the person that Jenny, they had tons of cats. Tons of cats.
Oh.
Wonderful cats. And she was so beautiful, just beautiful. She inspired me a lot. She's like an English rose that you see in all the books.
Yeah.
Really lovely. Yeah. And
that,
Steve
go ahead.
Was madly in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And we got on very well.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve was one of my heroes as well in the rock and roll scene. No one had a voice like Steve Marriott.
Yeah.
He was incredible. Now, did you know Sid Barrett before he came into the studio during which you were here?
He used to come to our house.
Oh, he did? Okay.
Yeah, on certain weekends when I first got there.
Right.
And then he got worse and worse, and eventually we didn't see him
mm-hmm.
until then. And David helped him with his one of his albums. He actually had to sit him on a stool and put his arms around him and help him play the guitar and everything. And Dave made sure that Sid got his publishing as well.
Right, right. Yeah, I saw the video, the Wish You Were Here video, where he comes into the studio and nobody recognized him. And, you know, what he looked like and everything. Yeah, that was quite a change from what he, you know, used to look like. It's amazing. It was really amazing.
Well, it was so much of a change that he didn't know who he was either.
Yeah.
And from the stories, he apparently on one of the tours, I think before Dave was asked to join, he had taken a lot of acid and it just didn't, he had
never
a really bad trip and he never came off.
Right. Yep. Never came back.
Nope.
You know, one of my favorite stories is I thought was very funny is when the fans, and I never knew this, that the fans in Paris were a little wild during concerts, jumping on the car, they were jumping on your car, going crazy, and you were laughing hysterically. And Roger Waters is asking, Dave, why is she laughing? And David's saying that's what she does when she's extremely panicked. And I just thought that was funny. I could see you laughing through this mayhem.
Well, the back entrance was a building on one side and an 8-foot fence on the right going down a block to the big gates.
Mm-hmm.
And all the fans were filling up that drive. And our driver kept going forward, and there was just about enough room barely on either side of the car. And I couldn't, being such a humanitarian, I could not believe this driver was still driving in and squashing these people to such a degree that they had no other choice but to jump on the car.
Oh, is that what happened? Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I was so upset.
Yeah. You were upset, but you were laughing, right?
And I that's what happens when really weird things happen. I start to laugh hysterically, yes.
I can see Roger go, why is she laughing?
I know. No. You could see his expression. I still see it. We spent a lot of time together, so I know
his
expression.
Yeah. That's funny. That was one of my favorites.
It was horrific. It was like a nightmare. Could not believe it that we were going to.
You
I didn't speak French. I couldn't swear in French. Tell the guy to stop. It was just. Anyway, that was one of the least pleasant stories.
Another funny one was your water skiing story. Where you're hanging on,
and
your bathing suit was falling off, I think. And that was funny.
I was so shy, I can't tell you.
That was great.
God.
There's a lot of great stories in the book like that, you know, and they catch you by surprise. Here you're talking about the tours and this and that, and all of a sudden a funny story pops up, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps it rolling, you know, with so many pages. It's just so entertaining.
One review said that I paint with words, and that people are taken into the journey, and they feel as though they are experiencing it.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right, and I have been experiencing it. Just, you know, you talked about. It's funny because every time you mention Roger Waters, the word angst,
angst
pops up. Angst. Every time Roger's name is there, there's angst. And I guess Roger was a little difficult in the earlier days, right?
Yes, he was a very challenging character. And
yeah.
There was one, the summer that we were in Greece and David had the rough mix of Roger's idea of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave came out of the sala, which is the living room in the Greek houses, and said, I don't think I can deal with this. It's just so full of anxiety and angst. And it's really because of Dave and Rick that album is palatable, quite frankly, from what it was in the beginning.
Right.
And I was saying in another interview the other day that what I find interesting is that as Goya, as a painter, mm-hmm. was for his time period, i.e., he painted some of the worst of what life could be being a human being, so that he shocked people that were asleep.
Right.
And the wall serves that, and it talks about all the difficulties and that we all
mm-hmm.
do and believe in, and then suddenly you have Comfortably Numb, which is the release. It's like heaven every time David plays that, having gone through everything at the beginning, and the music's so loud and you're almost hypnotized. But you go through transcendence. At least that's my viewpoint. That song releases you from all of that. And if you can take that into your life and find you're Comfortably Numb whenever it's difficult, that's the way out. And usually it's beauty and joy and laughter.
Well, Roger didn't want that song on the album, correct?
No, he didn't.
But which is David, crazy. It's the best song on the album.
Well,
it really is.
It's the release. And all of these songs up to that point build up and make it possible for the release to come.
Well, he didn't like it because it showcased David so much. David was amazing on that album. I mean, the lead on that, you know, that's second to none.
Well, sometimes it's hard to let go and share.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, some of the stories, Roger picked on Richard
mm-hmm.
and he threw his Cartier watch in the pool. And
mm-hmm.
he had incidents of spitting at the crowd because he didn't think the crowd, I guess, respected the music or something like that. But those are little things that Roger did. And I know Israel's not happy about Roger right now.
Who? Israel.
Israel, yeah, because he's not saying good things about Israel. As a matter of fact, they want to boycott him.
Well, I think we should stay away from politics right now.
Yeah, politics is a hard one to swallow. Yeah, I agree with you.
And I think Roger's doing a service for the world, and that's all I want to say, really.
Well, he's gotten better, and, you know, he's, I guess, made amends with the rest of the guys in the band, you know, with the reunion shows. And of course, he invites David to a lot of his shows, his wall shows, where David just shows up and plays Comfortably Numb. So that's pretty big of him to finally do that as well. And he is, he's a very intelligent guy, very smart, and he was one of the main creative forces behind Pink Floyd, and he did a lot of the lyrics. But I think what actually brought David out to the surface on his own was his solo album. When that solo album came out, I was in Fort Lauderdale, actually in broadcasting school. I went to a school for radio and TV. It was owned by CBS. And that album was so huge at the time. And it today is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Which one?
David's first solo album.
About Faith.
No, the one before that. The first one. That you're actually in the cover. Your picture's in the album.
I am indeed. This is true.
Yeah, that's a great album. And one of my favorite tracks on that album, I Can't Breathe Anymore. Do you remember that track?
Yeah.
I was wondering, did you know what he was, feeling the angst at that time between him and Roger Waters? Do you think that's why he wrote that, or was that life in general, do you think?
I think it's an archetypal song that whenever life gets a bit difficult, you can't breathe anymore. That's what it feels like. I can't speak for why he might have written it, but certainly we have had moments in our lives where it was really intense. I mean, it's there was all of the struggle financially when Andrew Warburg, our accountant, embezzled funds. You know, it's there was one of his very closest friends within the Cambridge group of people had picked up the white robes and became very spiritual while everyone else had more normal careers. And he committed suicide jumping in front of a train. That was a bit of a freak out.
Yeah.
You know, so that it's, David's full of heart. And it's, the English have very deep hearts.
Yes,
but
they
often keep it to themselves.
Right.
And David expresses those things through his music.
Well, you know, Pink Floyd has always been kind of surreal. You know, I mean, it's almost like a religion, you know, especially Dark Side of the Moon. And I always relate to music almost kind of like a religion. And, you know, and I say that about music from, like, early Yes. I talked to John Anderson about that. And sometimes I don't know if the artists know how much the music affects their listeners. You know, their music gets them through life more than anything else, and I know it has with me, especially Pink Floyd music. But, you know, David's solo album, I Can't Breathe Anymore, really meant a lot to me, and to me it has that same impact as Comfortably Numb. It's a great song, and more people need to listen to it. You know, it's one of those songs you don't hear too much.
Well, I think he's going to sell a lot of albums after this interview.
Yes, he did. About Face was a great album. His last album is wonderful. He's proven himself that he doesn't need the influence. You know, I'm trying to be nice about this, but he doesn't need the influence of Roger Waters. And it just proves, though, when Roger Waters went solo, he didn't make it that good. He got better now, you know, with the production of The Wall, but there was a big difference because, you know, they won the, you know, David and Nick and Rick won the name for Pink Floyd. And look, nothing changed. They sold out arenas and stadiums everywhere without Roger. So that goes to show you, egos backfire on you sometimes. But I love the way he incorporated Rick Wills, Willie Wilson, from his old band, you know, Joker's Wild. And I really like that. Yeah, I really like that band that he put together.
Yeah. There was this moment when we were in Ireland, and Mick Ralphs was with him as well from Bad Company. And he was having a shower, and there was a knock at the door, and Mick sort of leaned out of the shower room door and said, "Hello?" And one of the waiters said, Mr. Ralphs, I've got a telegram for you." And Mick says, "Well, slip it under the door." And he says, oh, I can't be doing that. It's on a tray. And it's just one of those things. It's like at one moment on the road in Ireland, it was special with the music, but at the same time, it was there was all that conflict still. You still felt right. Like maybe, and all the barbed wire in places, that maybe any minute there, a bomb's going to go off around the corner or something. It was
right.
A very
right.
Strange mixture of things, I have to say. But Rick and Willie were very special friends.
Yeah.
Still are.
Nick Ralphs also he went on tour with David About Face, I guess, starting out About Face after that album.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah. Your favorite track was Out of the Blue, right? From About Face.
It certainly is. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great album.
On the Wings of a Dove.
Yeah.
On the Wings of a Dove, a messenger comes. It's a message of. It's not a message of war, but a message of love.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting about that song is he was working with Bob Ezrin, who was producing it, who did most of the Floyd albums.
Right, right.
And he had already, they had finished, at least Bob thought so, and David just suddenly came up with that song and said, we have to put it on the album. And I'm glad he did, because it's really special.
It's a great album. You know, he's done so much great work on his own. You know, without the Floyd, just him on his own with Nick and then the guys from his childhood band. But you had I'm going to go back real quick. You had a harrowing experience when you entered a club called The Sanctuary in New York City. And the same thing happened to my wife when we saw the movie The Da Vinci Code, which is interesting. She had a panic attack during the movie, and she ran out of the theater and would not come back. I guess, you know, just you seeing a church, you know, and the altar and all that turned into a nightclub, I guess maybe with your Christian background, that kind of bothered you, didn't it?
All I can say is that when I went in there, it made me feel really sick.
Right.
We had to... The day before, I was getting very strange feelings. This was very new to me,
mm-hmm.
and that I needed to honor it, and it isn't just me being paranoid. And when we got closer and closer to it, it was like, wow, what am I supposed to do with these feelings?
Mm-hmm.
But David said, don't be silly. Come on, it's fine. And we get out of the car. We have to go through all the long lines of people waiting to get in. We get through, and they had made a staircase going up to the tower room, just
right.
There, metal staircase. And on the right was the entrance into the church. And there was just strobe lights cavorting up on the altar and into the pews, and really, really like something out of one of those crazy movies that are around about satanic rites and
right.
things. I'd never seen anything like it. And it just hit me so hard that I went upstairs to be polite, and after a while I couldn't stay. I had to leave. Plus I was had a worried about my kids, so I wanted to get back to the hotel.
That's amazing. The same thing happened to my wife, who, you know, she was brought up as Catholic, and you know, not overly religious or anything, but you know, very, very much believes in the right things, and you know, she has a very good heart, you know, like you. And the same thing happened. She ran out of that theater real fast, and she was thinking about the same, you know, this is like blasphemy. This is, you know, the devil and this and that, whatever. Which is very strange because she's not like that, you know.
Mm.
She had a very similar experience. Now, I got to ask you, and I saw this somewhere on the internet. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. But is David an atheist, has he changed that?
I think you have to ask him.
Yes, ask him. I was wondering if he was as spiritual as you are. I mean, through the music, it sounds like it. You know, but I did read that somewhere, that he did
well,
not.
I was graced to meet Dr. Werner Engel, who is the president of the Jungian Society in New York.
Right.
And he said that some artists are the last to know when they're connecting God, but we all have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he felt that David was one of those people.
Right.
That Carl Jung wrote a book called Art and the Unconscious, to where he describes how, what is the process. We are more than this physical body. We're more than our feelings. We're more than our minds. We have a divine impulse.
Right.
And we forget that. We think our mobile phones and cars and stuff and arguments are of greater importance. And you forget that. If you lose that link, you're lost. And
yeah.
And David, when he plays the guitar, when he does Comfortably Numb, he's there.
He is there. You're right. He's there.
And I wouldn't ever want to take that away from him.
Right, right. Ginger, we're running out of time here. I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. You're an amazing woman and sharing your incredible life with us today. I would love to have Matt on the show. You can tell him. Anytime, you know, if he wants to email me, we'll get him on right away.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to promote him. Do you have anything else you'd like to promote?
No, it's my book, of course, Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon, because I know that it makes people feel happy.
Well, it's a wonderful book. It's available on your site, www.angelscript.com, and also on Amazon.com and all your, you know, leading retail book sellers around the world. And again,
well,
I want to
yet.
Thank you so much.
They're not, it's not available in the bookstores yet.
Okay, I did see it on Amazon. It is on Amazon.
Yes, it is on Amazon.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah.
It is, so you can buy it online. And most people buy books online anyway. They don't really, the thing about buying books in stores are kind of a little passe, especially around this area. So,
well, I'm very proud of it. It sings that it's pink with gold letters, and it's a happy book, and it vibrates sitting on your table, and people love it. I have one woman that holds it to her heart before she goes to bed.
Well, the book can help a lot of people. It's you know, besides everything else, it's also kind of a self-help book for people. So I advise everyone to it's a fantastic read. Thank you again for being on the show today. And God bless you.
It's great fun. Thank you.
Thank you. You can purchase Ginger Gilmore's book entitled Memoirs of the Bright Side of the Moon at Amazon.com or visit Ginger Gilmore's website at www.angelscript.com and on Facebook at www.angelscript.com/facebook.html. You can also purchase Matthew Gilmore's latest release entitled The Gray at www.matthewgilmore.com or Amazon.com. Coming up next show, John Anderson, legendary Yes frontman and member of the Anderson Ponte Band. Also on the show, Jamie Glazer, guitarist for the Anderson Ponte Band. That's coming up next. And join me bi-weekly, Mondays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on the Ray Shasho Show. Very special thanks to Ellen Solis of Vermilion Media and Management for hooking us up today with Ginger Gilmore, and especially Don and Doug Newsom with BBS Radio for making it all happen every show. If you have comments or suggestions or would like to be a guest on the Ray Shasho Show, call 941-877-1552 or email us at ray@publicityworksagency.com. Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, also called Wacky Shenanigans on F Street on the second edition. It's the true story of an eclectic American family and their wacky family business, available now at Amazon.com. You'll live it. See you next time on the BBS Radio 1 Network. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to The Ray Shasho Show, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans, we shine when we make you shine. Join Ray Shasho every Monday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio, Station 1.